Hello, and welcome to Millennial 2017. I think it's number 26. And this is with Parse the Noise, who has a YouTube channel. Hello, and when did you start the channel?
Hello. Well, the channel's only a few months old, really.
Right, that's what I thought.
Yep.
And tell people what kind of topics you explore in that. I mean, did it come from the alt-right, or is it not alt-right? And where was your inspiration and so on?
Well, the kind of topics I deal with on the channel are issues of demographics, issues of population, immigration. So far, all the content has been quite data heavy. The reason I think that's important to do, or the reason I want to do that, is I want to lay down a bedrock of factual content on the channel before I veer off and explore topics in a more easygoing way. But I think it's important to at least, first of all, lay down a bedrock of very factual data. And also part of the motivation is that I want it to be well presented. I don't know how well I'm doing so far. I'm building up as I go along, hopefully, and making better looking content as things go along. But
so you use diagrams and charts and so on. And I think people could maybe comment on, they can have a look at your videos and tell you, give you feedback on that.
If they could do that, that would be spot on, perfect. That is exactly what I'm looking for. I realize at the moment it's very lengthy videos and probably quite involved statistically, data-wise. And I know I'm on board with the argument that that doesn't really red pill a lot of normal people. It doesn't really interest them. They're more emotional. But I nonetheless think it's important to lay down a bedrock of that sort of content, because there really is a whole world of industries out there who are producing content counter to the kind of narrative I'm talking about. And lots of people who are out there funding it, lots of media companies who pick up this funding and put out content of that sort, essentially promoting the idea of mass immigration, of globalism, of multiculturalism, and giving money to the third world. All of these things I think are detrimental.
Yeah, and that's why I would
in the West.
Yeah, I would advise, therefore, that you don't be afraid of repeating data in subsequent videos. Just keep putting out variations of the same data in different ways, because as you say, that's absolutely what our opposition are doing, and you know they don't care about repeating a point at all. In fact, it's very much, if you look at this in propaganda terms, it is a matter of repeating the message over and over in different ways so as to reach different people.
Absolutely. And for the moment I'm focusing on quite autistic content, if you want to say it like that, but eventually I think it would be wise to move into more clickbaity sort of stuff, you know, sort of off the top of my head, top five reasons why immigration is bullshit, top five reasons why multiculturalism doesn't work, or things along those lines. But at the moment, I'm focusing on the more data-heavy stuff and making sure it's as thorough as possible so that there is this kind of undergirding to all of the content that can really not be easily falsified.
There's a need for a channel that just collates this stuff and delivers it in as concentrated a form as possible. I think that's a very good idea.
Yeah. And like I said, there are whole industries devoted to doing this sort of thing, to promote an agenda that is counter to all of our interests. So I want to start countering that narrative, essentially. That's part of why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Right. Okay. Is there any way that people could help you with research and data?
If there's anybody out there who really would like to help out, yeah, absolutely. It's some of the content can be very time intensive, putting it all together, doing the animations and the editing and the script and the recording and the music and so on and so on and so on. So if there's anybody who has any experience researching these sort of things, if anybody who has perhaps even music they would like to contribute, don't be offended if I don't use it, if I'm not particularly into it, I don't think it suits. But yeah, I think research is probably the thing that I would most like people to be involved with, because it is the most time consuming thing.
Right. Okay. I hope people are taking that seriously, because this is something where, one person, the volume of data can be very intimidating and overwhelming for one person to deal with. I think that's something where, and also don't volunteer if you're not serious about it. This is not a sort of casual let's have a laugh sort of thing. This has to be really correct. Because, you know, a single video that can be debunked is that can debunk, that can be seen to debunk the entire channel. So, I mean, I know that there is a lot of good faith in the community, in the movement, but I think a lot of, sometimes people volunteer for things and they don't realize that it's actually going to demand time and concentration from them. There is still a sort of amateurishness about the movement sometimes. So I would just warn you of that. But on the other hand, if you have time and you have autism, let's say, weaponize it and use it because and channel it into, you know, something like this. And I think Parts of the Noise has created a platform that is ideal for this. So I would suggest that you help out if you can.
Yeah, and it won't just be very autistic content going forward. It will be a lot more...
No, I mean that humorously.
No, I know you do, but I mean, if people can, if people have ideas or scripts that they can give in for much more concentrated content, that would be amazing. But I think, like you said, one of the key things is that the research has to be spot on. And one thing I've been making sure I've been doing is I've been going through reading UN reports, reading official statistics, making sure that if I see a news article that's on one of these topics, I go to the source. I don't just take the headline for granted. So, and it's a thankless task. So if you really do want to be involved, be prepared to be doing that sort of thing because it's boring, but I think it's important to have, as you say, content that is not easily debunked because
just look at the skeptic community right now. I mean, they're going berserk trying to debunk our stuff. I mean, the reason I said that is because I know that helping out with a project like this would be demanding, particularly demanding. So I don't want to, create a situation where people get into it and then back out after a week, you know?
I understand. I mean, one thing that kind of comes to mind is there is a video on YouTube, and it must have been there from like 2009 or something like that, and it deals with the topic of Islamic immigration into Europe. And I remember, I saw it come up when I was looking for research on the latest video, which I've done, and the content is bollocks, to be perfectly frank. It's hyperbolic in the extreme. And then when you search for this kind of data, the first few things that come up are, A, this video, which is some sort of, you know, the anti-jihad right tier kind of content with like some scary American evangelical voiceover. And that comes up in the results, but also this list of like, you know, PolitiFact and HuffPo and all these people debunking this thing, which is essentially just shooting fish in a barrel. We need to not have that at all.
Yes, absolutely, because it makes us look bad. It can, as I said, it can be used against us. And you know, if you've got a website, some Antifa website, they will use one video to disgrace an entire channel, an entire effort. So it is one of those things where you have to be very careful. But what? So how did you get into all this?
That's not easy to say, really. I mean, I've been interested in the kind of topics that people now call the alt-right, the dissident right, etc., for going on 10 years. I contributed to some websites that were, you could say, were pre-alt-right in some ways. I contributed bits of writing and things and audio content, but it was nothing overly political. It was more kind of philosophy-focused, I guess you could say, and culture-focused, you know, art and music and so on. But there was an avenue within that to the kind of topics that people are now interested in terms of demographics and Islam and who runs the world, et cetera, et cetera. So I've just been aware of these kind of topics for as long as that. And little by little, I've kind of picked up bits and pieces of knowledge and I'm now putting them together into something.
Right. Okay. I think a number of people are wondering if you don't be offended. A number of people are asking if you could speak more slowly because they can't handle the accent. Obviously there are people from all over the world listening. So it's just something to be aware of. I had to sort of change how I spoke when I started as well for that reason, because I know I'm not just speaking to other Scottish people. But anyway,
that's a good point. Yeah, can you understand me? Okay, or am I too fast for you as well?
I can understand, but other people might not be able to follow.
Right. Just to gauge how too fucking fast I'm talking. So I will apologize, people.
It's an easy mistake. So, do you talk about just demographics or also the racial differences?
to a small extent. I think there are people who do that better than I could, to be honest. I think it's probably better left to the likes of Alternative Hypothesis, because they are far better informed on the subject. But for now, the themes have been... So I'm trying to run a series of videos called Population Transformation. The first one was on the demographic explosion in the third world. And the second one, which went out about a week ago, is about immigration and declining fertility and the balance of demographics in the West. It's called The Death of the West. And the next one will be focused more on the attitudes of the institutions in power, of policies that are clearly in place, of the attitudes of people who are powerful and influential towards the changing demographics of the West and towards immigration, and whether or not they are facilitating that or whether or not they are just bumbling through it, essentially.
There's another Irish channel called Gaelic Neo-Reactionary, and he has a video which is just clips. I don't know if he still has it up on his channel. I haven't checked. But he has a video that was just clips of Peter Sutherland. And, I mean, it was terrifying. I think he actually called it something like Peter Sutherland is the Antichrist incarnate or something like that. And you realize that we're up against people who really do see people, human beings, as just putty. To be shaped and, you know, it's a very strange, you know, to a normal person, to the common man, it's a very strange attitude that they seem to have.
It is. It's a particularly difficult to comprehend attitude if you're not, if you're looking for clear motives. But I think there's often not a clear motive for these people. I mean, I think Peter Sutherland will feature quite prominently in the video. And I certainly think he is an individual who is very ideologically driven. But I think the vast majority of people who are in the system are just not very imaginative and not very ideological. And they're just reproducing the system as it's been handed to them. They don't really consider the implications of it. They just take the morality and the policies for granted, essentially, and just perpetuate it.
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely true. It's important not to overestimate the degree to which our opponents, in inverted commas, are motivated by ideology. A lot of them are just, they're very unimaginative people, just, you know, pen pushers who are shuffling paper and keeping their heads down and just doing what they're told to do. It's a strange thing because we now have a system in place, an entire machinery in place that will ensure the demographic replacement of white Europeans. And I would say, I would guess that at least half of the people within that machinery never even think about it. So I'm just wondering if there are any questions from the chat for you. If there are, tag me in the comments so that I see it. Otherwise, I'll miss it. So, okay. Are there any other things that you'd like to say about your channel?
Not off the top of my head. I mean, you did cut out for a moment there, but I was going to follow up with just to sort of add to what you were saying. I mean, there was an incident earlier this year where the daughter of an EU official, I believe, was raped and murdered. And the EU official didn't really come out with, you know, fire and brimstone and hatred or like questioning himself, it seemed. He just came out doubling down on the narrative of diversity is our strength, please give money to refugees, etc., etc.
That was just so sinister. That was the guy in Freiburg whose daughter was raped and killed by the river by some kind of violent guy who he had a history of violence think in Germany and in other countries. And then the guy, he was some sort of functionary in the EU. I can't remember exactly what level. But yeah, I think he actually put together a charity or a fund of some kind to help migrants. It was absolutely amazing.
I believe so. And I wouldn't, somebody like that, I wouldn't necessarily peg as being ideological. It's just somebody who's spent their entire life invested in things being a certain way, that they just have to keep doing it that same way. It couldn't possibly be that diversity is not our strength, even though my daughter is now raped and dead. It couldn't possibly be that this is going to change Europe for the worse. You know, there's probably just a lack of ability to rationalize it.
Yeah, they don't. I think it's also just a total sort of stultifying lack of intellectual curiosity and imagination. They don't have the imagination to think, well, maybe there is another way. You know, maybe the stuff I've been told is not the only truth, is not the only way to live, is not the only way to think, and so on. It's just incredible, because you always think that people at that level of society, I mean, that's international government, or even a national government, you tend to think that they are going to be worldly and intellectually curious. But I think, in this age, there are only two conclusions. Either they are not intellectually curious at all, and as we're describing, or they are, and they're evil. And I think that's, in the majority of cases, that cannot be correct.
No, I would agree with you. I don't think many of the people are evil. I think the nature of democracy is that it essentially promotes mediocrities. A handful of people get into positions of power and influence, and they don't want other people in power positions in their same party or in the same positions of government that they are, who have as much power and influence. They want people who are easily malleable. And to some extent, the running of government requires people like that, really. People who are just by nature functionaries rather than thinkers.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, I've got several questions for you from the chat. One of them is, it just says, ask him about the abortion debate in Ireland. Do you have anything to say about that?
Cheers for the softball question. An easy one to answer. No, you're grand. It's not your fault. It's not an easy one to answer, to be honest, because my sympathies lean towards being going with the people who want to keep the status quo, to not repeal the Eighth Amendment. Because essentially, even if there may be good arguments for aborting children who have severe problems in the womb and who will not survive outside of the room, et cetera, the reality is they're kind of a minute percentage of babies who are aborted in countries where there is abortion. And even if it were a greater number, I would look at the issue as more just a power play by the left, who have already dug in.
Yes.
Quite hard in Ireland in the last few years and have pushed forward their agenda at an incredible pace for a country that barely 20 years ago, 30 years ago, I forget, had, you know, allowed things like condoms to be sold. All of a sudden is, you know, voting for gay marriage.
Absolutely.
The pace of change in Ireland is just totally an ideological coup in many respects. And I don't want to support even the sort of the viable, reasonable instances of abortion based on the fact that I know it's just a ruse, really, a political ruse.
Yeah. I had a guest on last millennial who was Irish, and he was describing the change, and it does seem to have been incredibly fast. As you say, 30 years ago, Ireland was a very traditional European country with a very settled population and very rigid religious doctrine governing a lot of daily life. And now it seems to be rapidly becoming another sort of progressive stronghold, much like Scotland, really. And also, I think that what you said there about how it's all just a power play by the left, it also applies to Scotland. I think that and I've said before, the Scottish independence thing, I think, was largely a progressive. It was dominated by the left. And so, a way to put that would be that it was a power play by the left. I don't think they really care about Scottish independence. They care about English or British dismantlement and the advancement of progressivism worldwide. And ironically, Scotland becoming an independent country would facilitate globalism and homogenization of European populations, you know, at the cultural and genetic level.
Yeah, I think so. It's unfortunate that the main parties that seem to represent nationalism in the British Isles outside of England, such as Plaid Cymru, the SNP and Sinn Féin, are really not nationalistic beyond the redrawing of borders in the United Kingdom. Beyond antipathy towards the English, there's not much about them that is nationalistic. They are very much either soft Marxists or full-blown Marxists. I would say, I don't get the impression, perhaps you would disagree with me here, but I don't get the impression that the SNP are particularly ideologically hardcore. I think a lot of them are just blowing with the wind, really.
Yeah, I think they're quite pragmatic, actually, on issues of left and right. I think they're pro-business when it suits them. They're pro-welfare when it suits them. I think it's actually quite difficult to characterise the SNP politically on the left-right spectrum, or on the libertarian-authoritarian spectrum, to be honest. I mean, some things that they... Well, you could definitely say that some of their ideas are authoritarian, but not... That wouldn't... You couldn't say that they as a whole are an authoritarian party. But you can say that they're anti-English. And now, yes, that might be simplistic, but I think it is true, generally speaking.
I think so. I think it's the way that they define... The way that the fringe countries in the British Isles seem to define their identities is in part in opposition to the English. And so there's, particularly with a party like Sinn Féin, there has long been this kind of third worldist sympathy within them. So solidarity with Palestine, solidarity with the Black South African struggle, etc., etc. Not in a particularly nuanced way or even a particularly ideological way for most of the people who are in the party or vote for the party, but just because it's a proxy for being anti-British, it's a proxy for being, essentially anti-English, really. Seeing oneself as an underdog, really.
Yeah, rather than seeing oneself as a European and or British, exactly, or white. Absolutely, this is the thing, and this of course applies to the Scottish independence debate as well. You want to separate from England only to become absorbed into a much huger governmental system.
Yeah,
or population mass in Europe. I mean, it's crazy. But related to that, here's another question. What does your guest think about the IRA hating the English, whether legitimately or not, but now being anti-racist, pro-multiculti Marxists?
Yeah, well, the Provisional IRA and modern Sinn Féin have pretty much always been a Marxist party in terms of the core leadership and the core on paper objectives of what they believe and what they hope to achieve. But I would strongly debate that the average Sinn Féin voter, particularly in the North, is anything like that. It's just, for them, voting Sinn Féin is just a proxy for wanting a united Ireland. A lot of them are Catholic, quite traditional, wouldn't want mass immigration, but they vote for the party that has all those things because it's just a tribal thing. In many respects, I view Northern Ireland as the quintessential example of why multiculturalism doesn't work, even on a tiny level. Here you have two white populations, more or less ethnically the same, religiously pretty much similar, and yet here we are, 400 years down the line, and we're still dealing with fallout from the fucking act of putting them together. All politics is just essentially tribal politics. It's not really policy-based.
Mm. And that then becomes a tool of Absolutely. External powers who can use those, the narcissism of small differences in order to manipulate two groups of people against each other.
Yeah, and I think it gives, perhaps not in the short term, but over the longer term, it gives a genuine nationalist party a chance with the people who vote for Sinn Féin. Not perhaps as long as there is. It's quite as hot a situation as it is at the minute because there's been no government in the North and, there's the issue of Brexit and the border. So probably not at the moment, but over the longer term, people will probably begin to see that Sinn Féin do not particularly represent what they claimed to represent even 20 years ago. The idea that right. Martin McGuinness and Gerry Adams in the 1990s would have been stood next to transvestites cheering on gay marriage would have just blown the minds of people who voted for Sinn Féin in West Belfast or Tyrone or any of those kind of areas which are strongly, strongly nationalistic. And yet here we are.
Yeah.
So there is the chance for a party which has a genuine nationalist feeling, a genuine conservative, I want to say, but I don't, a genuine kind of right-wing leaning, community-focused nationalism that isn't internationalist like Sinn Féin really is.
So I guess that leads me to another question that's come from the chat. What do you think about Justin Barrett and the National Party?
So far, so good, quite honestly. Yeah, have not had many things to disagree with them about in terms of what they stand for. I am hopeful that they will become a viable party. I'm hopeful that they will, you know, they haven't done anything that particularly embarrasses themselves yet so far. They're quite a solid option. It seems, you know, I look at England and it's just been failed attempt to have a genuine nationalist party there. But I think Ireland is probably has a better chance because there is this ingrained sense of nationalism within the culture itself that it's easier to tap into. You know, last year was the anniversary of the 1916 Rising, which is kind of the founding mythology of the Republic of Irish state. And the state broadcasters were putting out films about how wonderful it is and how it connects to our modern Ireland. And it was all essentially just multicultural propaganda. And there is just no way.
It's amazing. It's amazing how they managed to do that. How could they say that the people involved in that 100 years ago would have any idea about multiculturalism or any notions in that direction?
Not at all. I mean, there are a few voices who were explicitly quite racial in their nationalism, but by and large, they were almost all conservative Catholics. So there's just no way that they would have been in favor of, you know, the kind of social changes that have happened, and certainly not in favor of the demographic change that's gone on. Why be in favor of a free Ireland if all you want to do is hand it over to another population entirely? There's just no way whatsoever that they would have been in favor of this. But it's part of the cognitive dissonance of the modern Irish official psychology, if I guess I could say that. That somehow 1916 and the great nationalist leaders have been representing Ireland throughout history somehow are also way behind the current regime and its multiculturalism and its corruption and its, you know, endorsement of degeneracy, essentially.
Well, indeed, and that sort of invites the sarcastic meme in the future, like, at least I've still got the Irish constitution, even though I'm surrounded by people who are not Irish, you know?
Yeah.
Someone else asks, what do you think about Ireland rejoining the British Commonwealth?
I'm more or less ambivalent about it, to be honest. It would be nice if Ireland had a normal kind of relationship with the other nations of the British Isles, particularly England. As I kind of said, it still, to a large degree, defines its identity in opposition to being English. And yet the reality is that its culture has absorbed an enormous amount of English culture, for better or for worse. And the average person watches an enormous amount of, British television and consumes English media and, you know, follows English football teams, and yet somehow divorces that from the fact that they deep down hate the English. Well, it's just not going to work in the coming century. It's not viable to hate people who are going to be essentially in the same situation as you are. Either you learn to get on with them and learn to help each other, or you're both fucked.
Yeah.
Particularly indeed. Ireland is fucked. I mean, the size of the population of Ireland compared to Britain, it's minuscule. If Britain becomes a majority non-white country, a majority any religion that's not what has been the religion for the last number of centuries, then it's going to wield a disproportionate amount of power and influence over the smaller country next door. There's just no way it's not going to do that.
Oh, absolutely. To link back to something you said earlier, somebody has commented, I don't know what the source is for this, 75% of Sinn Féin voters are against immigration.
Really? I would love to see that.
It'd be interesting. Perhaps you could send me that link for that. But it doesn't say, it wouldn't surprise me.
It wouldn't surprise me either.
I think, yeah, there is a general theme in Europe, but I think certainly in Britain, the British Isles, that political parties simply do not represent the idea. I mean, and then you've got the tribal loyalty. Like, why do people keep voting for parties that don't represent their interests? But it's just tribalism. It just goes on. It's a real problem.
I think so. I think even the conservative Labour divide in Britain, in England, essentially comes down to tribal loyalty. I think voting Labour for the Welsh and for the Scots is basically a proxy for being anti-English. But I think there's also the sort of the north-south dynamic in England, which is, you know, if you wanted to be really kind of autistic, I guess you could say, you could perhaps say that the north of England is more Nordic, more Anglo-Saxon, whereas the south of England is more Norman. And, you know, there's this cultural divide there that comes back to a long distant ethnic divide. And that it, even the sort of apparent policy politics, is actually just tribal politics.
That is a very interesting way to look at it. I wouldn't be surprised if there is some subliminal awareness of ethnic difference between the north and south. You can see it in the phenotypes. I mean, you can see it in people's facial features. Yep. There is a difference. There are certain Northern English, looks.
Yeah, there's definitely more Nordic look about people from Yorkshire, certainly. But there was a study done in Ireland a couple of years ago, in which the two main parties in Ireland, for anybody who doesn't know, are a party called Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And the division between them goes back to the Civil War in the 1920s, essentially. But there was the study that looked at the frequency of surnames in the different parties, the frequency of Gaelic surnames, and the frequency of Norman surnames. And Fine Gael had a higher percentage of Norman names, and Fianna Fáil had a higher percentage of Gaelic names. So even there, even perhaps embedded into the Civil War itself, was this sort of latent ethnic conflict. I mean, certainly there's a class element to it. If you have a Norman name in the British Isles, you are more likely to be middle class. And that certainly plays out in Ireland as well. Fine Gael would be perceived as the more middle class party, whereas Fianna Fáil are kind of implicitly nationalistic, but it's a very distant kind of residual nationalism for them now.
Well, that's the trouble. When something is implicitly nationalistic, it can easily be subverted into globalism, because the nationalism is never explicitly stated.
Right.
It's that thing, but unless you're explicit in your aims and your goals and the things you care about, then, well, it is easy to just lead you to quietly distort you into something else, even opposed to those things.
Right. Irish politics are sort of, most other countries have the implied sense of being, you vote for the left party or the right wing party, red, blue, whereas Ireland's two main parties, there isn't an ideological dimension to them, really. It is explicitly, well, it's not explicit, but it's sort of implied civil war politics, implied tribalism, perhaps. Certainly, it would be a case of certain areas of the country would be Fianna Fáil territory and certain areas of the country would be Fine Gael territory. So there is an implied tribalism there.
Yeah, of course. I mean, people congregate in areas, and that leads to a particular culture developing there and maintaining and being strengthened there over time. And then you are going to see the results of that centuries later.
Right.
Somebody else asks you about, talk about the gay marriage thing in Ireland. I think people are quite interested in how causes and crusades that have taken place elsewhere in the world are now playing out in Ireland.
Right. Well, I believe I'm correct in saying that Ireland was the first country to actually vote for gay marriage. And I think
really?
That
I
indicates,
that.
I believe so, yes. I'd have to double check that, but I think that's true. But like most elections, a lot of people don't even bother fucking turning up. But the reason people didn't seem to turn up is that they were gaslit into not turning up, arguably. They didn't feel like it was, like the culture was theirs anymore. Like Ireland's culture is, the great demoralizing event in Irish culture in the last 20 years was the scandals that involved the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church This Catholic Church is kind of the center of a lot of people's communities and the bedrock of their conservative values. But all of a sudden, if you find out that they've been diddling your children for fucking years, then you're going to question your entire sense of worldview. And somebody who has the opposite worldview and they're advocating quite strongly for it, then they're going to have a sort of psychological advantage over you at the very least. And I'm talking quickly again, so I shall slow down.
Apart from anything else, it's a breakdown in trust, isn't it? I mean, you need a society, the people in a society need to be able to trust each other and the institutions and the people in those institutions. There needs to be an assumption that we're all on the same page here. We're not going to fuck each other over or fuck each other's children. And I mean, to put it in horrible, crass terms, I apologize, but that should just be, you know, ideally that would be a given. And yet now there is this understanding that, well, we really let things slip here. And in fact, it's not even a recent thing. It's been going on for many decades. I actually read that the Nazis, when they took over one of the Channel Islands, they actually found paedophilia going on there and stomped it out. I mean, this is not something that is incredibly recent.
No, I mean, I only kind of half listened to your last stream, but they were talking about institutional paedophilia in the British Isles there, I believe, weren't they? And it's kind of a rabbit hole you can certainly go down in terms of, you know, how does it happen that positions of power end up with people who are of this persuasion, shall we fucking say?
Well,
I guess it's true that they are easily manipulated, and like they are essentially, you're a good pawn if you've got the biggest taboo against your name. But yeah,
it's a very strange thing. I mean, yeah, this is why I was asking them what is the point of it all, because it's one thing to make a shocking statement that people in power are into paedophilia, but then how does that keep happening? Is that a coincidence? I think it is an interesting thing. I mean, this is why Pizzagate is another example of it. This is why Pizzagate is interesting as well. It raises the same question. Why is it that so many of these people in power are susceptible to that type of blackmailing and can be led into doing something like that, or allowed, facilitated in doing something like that? And I didn't really get an answer to that. Maybe no one knows the answer to that.
Yeah, it is a difficult one to answer, really, because a lot of the information that would tell you either way is probably forbidden from being entered into, you know, the public are not allowed to see it, really, are they? So it's hard to know for certain, and wild conspiratorial speculation is all most people have.
Indeed. I suppose, I'm not really sure what I want to say about this. There's something in my head, but I can't quite articulate it. It's like, it's a very dark thing, and so it's something that you could misuse or exaggerate, and on its own, it seems to be meaningless and baffling, confusing. You know, it's like, how does this happen? Unless there's an explanation, then the whole thing just seems like a sort of random horror show.
And yeah, I would caution any political movement who is trying to gain traction on nationalist issues to avoid talking about that sort of thing, to be honest. Not because it may or may not be true, but because you just look like a nutcase when you talk about that sort of thing without any actual evidence. Whereas like one of the things I'm trying to do with my channel, like I said at the beginning, is that I want hard, verifiable facts, because it's non-falsifiable. It's hard to categorize somebody as a lunatic or a fringe or a Nazi or whatever if they're using your data, and if it's hard to falsify that data. Whereas with something like the sort of conspiratorial Pizzagate stuff, we're all just sort of sitting back going, what the fuck, how could this be real? And grasping at things that may or may not be true. And so it's a good way to characterize a political movement as fringe or crazy or conspiratorial. And the last thing any sort of ascendant political movement really wants is to appear fringe, because at that point, you're just going to peter out.
Absolutely. I mean, one way to do it, I mean, you could still be written off, even if all your data was, you know, sourceable, provable, correct, etc. But nonetheless, it is a lot more difficult. And one thing I think that we need to do, and this applies to other areas of concern in the alt-right, is it's one thing to say a lot of the people in this group do this thing. But then you've also got to look at the percentage you've got to know what that percentage is. You've got to be able to guess at that percentage. And then if you look at it from the other direction, a lot of people who do this thing are off this group. Then again, you've got to look, well, what is that percentage? How many of them are there in total in this area of this arena? And how many of them are doing this thing? So to an extent, it does come down to cold statistics. At least cold statistics can be very useful in drawing out the dynamics and the likelihoods, the tendencies.
Certainly. I mean, as I've kind of said, I don't think a lot of people really give two flying fucks about statistics or numbers. It just goes over their head. But I think you notice that it sort of undergirds a lot of their argument. They can kind of checkmate people with, oh, did you see that Adam Ruins Everything video where he debunked immigration, you nutcase? Or did you see that Vox video, or et cetera, et cetera? But the reality is that these people's data is often pretty fucking bad.
And the reason I mentioned this is that the Catholic Church pedophile scandal, again, it would be useful for both sides of this culture war to be able to speak in fairly precise statistical terms, because I read that in America, I think it was Molyneux actually who reported this, and I had read it previously a year earlier, that in America you're more likely to be molested by a state school teacher than by a Catholic priest. Statistically, you know, the percentage of Catholic priests who do that is much smaller than the percentage of state school teachers who do that. So if you're going to attack the Catholic Church for this, you should also attack the state school system for it more readily, in fact. But Molyneux did repeat that, so I'm guessing it's fairly accurate, fairly reliable. But again, this is something where it would be useful to know it in cold terms. However, I do agree with you that even beyond that, a lot of people just don't care about statistics. Ultimately, it comes to, romantic ideas in their heads that you can appeal to. On that note, somebody asked the following question. Can a new blue shirts movement emerge in Ireland, or is the old nationalism now diluted?
I don't see a militant nationalism arising anytime soon, if that's what they mean. I mean, people kind of romanticize the blue shirts, but as far as I understand it, they didn't really accomplish that much. They didn't really leave that much of a legacy on the culture. So at this point in time, do we need blue shirts any more than we need an NSDAP? We don't, because as soon as there were one, it would be snuffed out, wouldn't it, by the powers that be, because they know how to deal with that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, of course. I'm just asking because it was in the chat.
Oh, yeah, sure. One of the advantages of what's been happening is that it's been so diffuse. There hasn't been a centralized organization to anything. It's just people on their own terms finding things out, which makes it hard to stamp out. And I think that's kind of that's certainly where Ireland is at the minute. Ireland needs more of that. Ireland needs more of a cultural sea change rather than a political movement, which is what I think the National Party have kind of realized that, because they're not going into elections just yet. They're focusing on building up ahead of steam, and they're focusing on their media output. And I think that's wise. I think it's good to play the battlefield as it is.
Yes, I completely agree. There has been a sort of fecklessness about this in the past, I think. And I've spoken about this in several videos, where people think, well, let's just take on the political establishment. But that's like, a small squad of soldiers trying to take on an entire army. And it's just crazy. I think at this stage, as I've said before, we have to work on the culture.
Right. I mean, to go back to the 1916 example, at the time the 1916 Rising happened and failed, support for it was extremely low. It was only after they had been martyred and it had been this big sort of public spectacle that support happened. So people don't generally support people who are going to disrupt their daily lives for grand ideological causes, even if it's a cause that they believe in, because people did support a unified, independent Ireland. But the idea of a militant attempt to force that to happen was just not supported. It's only once it sort of filtered into the culture that people's support for it was a thing, really. So
look at the gay marriage thing and all the rest of it that's happened over the last 10 years. That didn't come to some extent it did come from the political realm, because they just suddenly decided to start talking about it. But that the media and culture had paved the way for that, to make that even conceivable.
Certainly, and one of the things in Ireland is that there had been decades of cultural movements that have been the Gaelic League, the Gaelic Athletic Association, which had built up a sense of Irishness that people would buy into, a sense of why people should believe in a nationalistic cause. It wasn't just a militant party came along and people went, yep, that's great, we'll do that. because attempts to do that in the past had failed. You look at the 1798 uprising, and you look at Robert Emmet, you look at movements in the middle 1800s as well, and they were formed with militant goals in mind, and they didn't get anywhere. It was only once the cultural movements had happened that support for things like the 1916 rising and the War of Independence could even happen. And that's the position we're at the moment, is that we need to rebuild a culture. We need to focus on the things that make a people.
Yeah, I agree. Well, before we wrap up, are there any final things you'd like to say about your channel and how people could help with it and so on?
Well, at this stage, if you are particularly interested in helping out, send me an email at parsethenoise@protonmail.com. Otherwise, be sure to subscribe to the channel. There will be more content soon. The latest video, The Death of the West, is, I think, the strongest video I've done so far. I may go back and redo some older ones because I don't think the aesthetics are quite on point, whereas I think this one's pretty okay at the minute. And hopefully that's going to be a springboard for more content.
Excellent. Well, the channel's linked below, and I think people will be able to contact you from there as well. So I'll leave it at that. So I think it's a very good thing that you're doing, and I wish you luck with it.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're welcome. So that was Parse the Noise, and the next one is in about 40 minutes. And that is with Tree of Logic, I believe. Yes, it is Tree of Logic. So I will see you then. Thank you, Parse the Noise, and thanks for everyone for listening. I'll see you soon.